All right, let's get started, please. This is the final session today, final parallel session of physical sciences. And we have four talks today. Our first one is by David Wynyard, and he is at Mount Vernon Nazarene University. He's an associate professor of engineering. And he is going to talk about transhumanism, which is how human life can be transformed and enhanced by the application of science and technology, and how that relates to Christian diplomacy. Brian.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm an engineering professor, and I've worked a long time for U.S. government as an engineer, but I kind of consider myself a recovering engineer. A few years ago, I went back to school at Virginia Tech, studying science and technology from a humanities perspective, science and technology studies as a field. And I finished my doctoral dissertation last fall. I defended it. And this is the final conclusion of several talks that I've given to ASA. They say a successful dissertation is one you finish. So I finished. So I know I'm successful. So whether or not this makes any sense or not, it remains to be seen. It's interesting also, I look at this line on the parallel sessions here, and I know all of these guys, and I'd just love to be somewhere else, but here I am. This is the spot they gave me, so
it is what it is.
Just a little bit about my, I'll skip over that. This is the trajectory I've been on in my working life, working as an engineer for all of those years, going to Virginia Tech, being very surprised by the opportunity to go to Mount Vernon and to begin teaching engineering there. But I'm really very, very much more interested in how Christianity integrates or fits with technology, especially future technology. A lot of the science, a lot of the focus of Christian debates these days has to do with human origins and not so much about human destiny. And I'm much more interested in thinking about how Christians should engage with technology going forward. And so that's the topic that came to me when I went to school. My dissertation advisor suggested transhumanism as a place to look, and it turned out to be a wonderful area to look at because of its strong connections with religious thought. And so that's what we'll be talking about here. Really, it comes down to a kind of a challenging situation of how do you make sense of these things? We have five, transhumanism, as we'll see, really kind of comes together in terms of five convergent fields of science and technology. The transhumanist community itself has a very strong sense of spirituality in it, but there are different strains of that. So there are five different transhumanist views of spirituality that we'll talk about. And then, of course, Christianity. There are many different types of Christians, so there are a lot of different ways that Christians look at things. And how do you make sense of this when there's so much going on here? Bruno Latour is a significant figure in science and technology studies, and his idea of modes of existence in a book he wrote in 2014 has been my model, at least academically, to look at how to fit these things together. And he especially underscores the idea of category mistakes, that these are things that when different people are talking about things using the same language, but meaning something completely different. That's how you can identify that there are different modes of existence, different ontological presuppositions that are coming together and not always communicating with one another. And he looks to those as ways of identifying things you can grab a hold of and start a meaningful dialogue, diplomacy between different modes of existence, is Bruno Latour's argument. So, transhumanists and Christians have superficially similar conceptions of a lot of different things. The idea of God and the idea of human destiny and what is good. So they talk a lot, many times in the same language, but in many cases they're talking about completely different things. And that's the focus of what I'm talking about here. So the big question, everybody has to have a dissertation question, can Christians engage with transhumanism and should they? That's the unanswered question. Looking at this topic. First of all, what is transhumanism? It's defined roughly as a philosophical and social movement that says that fundamental transformations of human life through science and technology are both possible and desirable. It's not a technical field. Sometimes the people that are doing the technical work want to have as little to do with transhumanism as possible because they find it to be distasteful to them or too close to science fiction or abusive of what they're doing. But the transhumanists are not bothered by that. They are looking at what will happen later this century, and they see this convergence of these five technosciences, which are listed there. In visual form, this is what we're talking about. So we're all familiar with the DNA molecule and biotechnology. Nanotechnology is coming along to manipulate things at the molecular level and to correct genetic mistakes and all those sorts of things therapeutically. But then the question comes up, should we modify the DNA and do other things to enhance our capabilities, to go beyond what is quote-unquote normal today? A lot of this is tied in with computer technology and artificial intelligence. So this is the HAL 9000 from Kubrick's 2001. You can't do much in either of these areas without computers helping you sort out things like the genetic code and what modifications you should make to them. There's a lot of connections with neuroscience, that if computers are wonderful today, the thought is if we can figure out how the human brain is programmed and imitate its massively parallel architecture, then computers will open up and do even more wonderful things in the future. And all of this kind of comes together with the fifth area, which is robotics. And the idea here, you see these two figures looking at a computer screen, and it may seem obvious which is the human and which is the robot, but the transhumanists blur that distinction. So it's not clear, really, here whether you have two human beings or two robots, or one of each, or even three, because there is a computer screen here. The idea of the transhumanist is that the information in a person's brain and their thinking patterns and memories can all be uploaded into a computer. And as long as you pay your backup fees, I guess you're immortal. And so perhaps from the transhumanist point of view, there are actually three people. Really, what does it mean to be human comes into this very, very strongly. In terms of spirituality, you have a range of figures here that are all involved in transhumanism, ranging from Max Moore down here at the lower left. I don't know how to get that rid of that.
I'm not sure.
There we go. No, it's still there. I can't drag
it
off.
It's always there.
Poor Max has his... something taped across there. But Max Moore is a leading philosopher of transhumanism. He is an atheist. He's the president of the Alcor, which does the cryogenic preservation of people in liquid nitrogen in the hopes of reanimating them at some point. He's down here on the low end of the spirituality spectrum. Nick Bostrom is similar to Max Moore, but he introduces some thoughts that really bring theology into the picture. How do we make sure that artificial intelligence remains good according to our thinking? Or how it almost reads like an account of the fall, an account of sin when he is writing about how artificial superintelligence could go in the wrong direction and start producing evil results. Ray Kurzweil is the leading evangelist, if you will, of transhumanism, probably the best known of those figures. Known for his idea of the singularity, which is supposed to come along in 2045. He talks a lot in his book about things in terms of spiritual things. He wrote a book called The Age of Spiritual Machines. So spirituality means a lot to Kurzweil, in part because of his upbringing as a Unitarian. William Sims Bainbridge is a sociologist of religion. He also works for the National Science Foundation is involved in a lot of government research and artificial intelligence and how to capture people's personalities. And so he's very much interested in religion as a motivator for society to continue the progress, whatever that happens to be. And finally, Martine Rothblatt up here in the upper right, she is head of a group called TerraSim, the TerraSim movement, and they embrace spirituality in all of this. From a very materialistic point of view. Their documents talk about the imperative for mankind to actually create God. They use that language. So it may be mumbo jumbo or fancy
dreaming to us, but these people seem to take it seriously. They seem to think that, by creating artificial intelligence and merging with it somehow or the other, that's the end result, something that will be indistinguishable from God. Even to the point of changing the laws of physics. Some of the dreaming about how, what they're going to do is beyond the pale. There's no rationality to it at that point. Of course, in terms of Christianity, there's a broad range of views. Niebuhr's For Christ and Culture describes five points of view for Christians, ranging from Christ against culture to Christ of culture. One is hostile to the developing culture, including science and technology, and the other embraces it and doesn't seem to have any need for Christianity involved in it. In the middle of that is a Christ-transforming culture position. And N.T. Wright is kind of in that spot. He is, if there's a patron saint of transhumanism from the Christian community's point of view, N.T. Wright would be it. He very much advocates a transforming society and applying Christianity to things. And what the limits are to that is not clear. That's one of the things that's kind of fuzzy. Is God going to resurrect the dead at the end of the age, or are people somehow going to do that? And that's where it gets a little bit shaky. So those are the five converging sciences and technologies, the five transhumanist views of spirituality, and then there are these five different views from the Christian point of view of how culture and science and technology fit together. There is a Christian Transhumanist Association. 2 years ago in Tulsa, I spoke with two of the people that formed this, Christopher Bennick and Micah Redding, and they have moved along. They've added members, and they have an academic council now. And they came out recently with this kind of declaration of what they believe. They've been very cagey about describing what Christian means. It's a Christian Transhumanist Association. It's not a Christian Transhumanism Association. I mean, I'm interested in looking at transhumanism from the Christian point of view, but to be a member of this, you have to basically identify yourself as a transhumanist. And their declaration is here. A lot of it is kind of, I would say, you know, motherhood and apple pie kind of things that you couldn't possibly disagree with. But when it comes to the fifth area, we believe that the intentional use of technology coupled with following Christ will empower us to become more human across the scope of what it means to be creatures in the image of God. They seem to be, to leave that kind of open-ended, that whatever it means to be human, we're for it, and if that happens to be integrating with your computer, well, maybe that's human too. And it seems to be very drifting very far away from anything recognizable as Orthodox Christianity. And that's where I have some difficulties with the group.
What do they leave behind when they leave the identification of Christianity undefined? The ASA has, you know, the Nicene and Apostles' Creed as fundamental things that all members have to agree with. The Christian Transhuman Association has none of that. A very large fraction of its membership are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church. There are other people that I can't tell why they call themselves Christian at all. And so it's a very open-ended association, and I think they're leaving a lot of useful things behind when they adopt a minimalist theological position. It kind of comes into focus in terms of this issue of superintelligence. That you may have seen news stories of this nature where they say that we should fear robot intelligence that can become a threat to us. This is quoted to Bill Gates and many others down here, Musk and Hawking and Steve Jobs and Bill Joy down here, the founder of Sun Microsystems, wrote an essay many years ago called Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. And he basically posits the idea that artificial intelligence, if it starts running things, will have no use for humanity anymore. And so it ends up being a dehumanizing movement. It's a threat to us rather than something that helps us. Christian thought has a lot to offer in that, but what I find is the Christian Transhumanist Association doesn't really embrace that. Jocko Lowell, that was mentioned in one of the talks earlier, he talks about the problems of the fallen world, and he sees mankind bent upon suicide in his book, The Presence of the Kingdom, which I think is the best Jocko Lowell book. There are other people that have written about it. Matthew Dickerson talks about artificial intelligence and how it's fundamentally different from the way in which human minds work, and it cannot possibly support some of the commitments we have as a culture and as Christians, commitments to free will and heroism and defining love and those sorts of things. What the machine can do cannot be associated with those qualities that we value as human beings. I'm intrigued by Esther Meek's book, Loving to Know. She spoke also a couple of years ago at Tulsa. And it's one of those books that came on the screen too late for me to really fully digest it before writing my dissertation, but I would highly recommend that. She talks about all-knowing as personal. When you start talking about a computer and the intelligence that would be in there and the interactions we might have with those, well, it seems very personal. And so Meek would argue, I think, that there is some reality to those things, but all of that takes place in the reality that is God and all of God's traffic. She basically says that all reality is either God or God's personal effects. How do we deal with things when over all of what we're dealing with is God as a person who is involved in their lives and involved in the future of the world? So there's a lot of thinking that can be brought to this picture. I certainly did not finish it in my dissertation. My point was basically that by leaving aside all of the couple thousand years of Christian thought on things, the Christian Transhumanist Association is not doing us any favors. We really need to bring serious Christian theological ideas back into this picture just to sort out things like artificial intelligence and where that's going. So my conclusions, that in the minds of many people, transhumanism and Christianity are on collision course, they are incompatible. But it turns out there's a segment of the Christian community that seems to be open to this and welcoming it to it. But in the course of developing an idea of Christian transhumanism, they have left aside a lot of the ingredients that lead to solutions to problems. And this idea of theological minimalism is a problem. And the Christian theology has may not have answers to a lot of these questions, but it brings a lot of wisdom to two things. And that's one of the shortcomings of the movement. If you're interested or if you have trouble sleeping at night, my dissertation is available online at that address. And when this is posted, you can go out and download it. So I'm waiting for it to become viral.
It was interesting. All through my career as an engineer, as a Christian, I was always thinking about how does this fit in? And what do I do differently as a Christian? And serving as an engineer, and I hope I bring some of that thought to my students teaching in engineering. But one of the things I noticed again and again working as an engineer is that many, many times there are technical solutions to problems that cannot be implemented for one reason or another. And so I started to appreciate more the human and social and other aspects of things. Why do we choose some things and not others? And I think that Christian thought has a lot to bring to the table in those areas. Here at the end of my engineering career, I'm happy to be thinking more about those things.
Just a kind of foundational question or comment. I was recently rereading Stanley Yockey's book on brains, minds, and computers. Now, Yockey is very conservative, and I certainly do not buy entirely into his his kind of scholastic philosophy. But he is very critical of the entire idea of there being such a thing as artificial intelligence. And I just wonder, when you hear, you have some of these more extreme versions of emerging our minds with computers and so forth, is that perhaps society in general has perhaps gotten a kind of snow job on the idea of the reality of artificial intelligence that, that feeds into a lot of this?
Well, I certainly have some sympathies with that. Let me just give you the radical Christian view of this.
Could you repeat the question just a little bit so that people in the back row can hear?
Yeah, the question has to do with whether or not artificial intelligence is something of a snow job. Is there something that, in the way it's being presented to us, that is inherently false? And certainly some of the critics would point to that. They would point to the idea that today's computers, at least, are mechanistic. The future is completely determined by their state and the programming and all of that. And so that leaves out any possibility of free will. So the secular materialist people will say, well, there's nothing different about your meat machine up here that you're determined by all the physics. Now, some of the Christians who are involved in this will argue that when we are made in the image and likeness of God, we are given some of those godlike powers, and we could, in fact, perhaps create souls. They will be embodied in these machines. Now, to me, that is the warrant for that kind of belief, I think, is a little bit lacking, or at least very fuzzy. But that is what some of the people that call themselves Christian transhumanists would argue. That they don't seem to see the limits. And when I raise questions about sin, we'll deal with that. Well, that's just a programming problem.
Okay. In the middle?
A comment and then a question. My comment is that actually we already have artificial intelligence in a certain sense. I mean, when you interrogate Google, that is an amazing multiplication of the intellectual capacity of an individual human in a way that couldn't have been dreamt of 25 years ago, in a certain sense. But it's different from the artificial intelligence that's often envisaged in 2001 Space Odyssey and by transhumanists. So, but my question is, did you explore the similarities and differences between transhumanism and eugenics? Because it seems to me that in many respects, transhumanism is a new type of eugenics.
Yes, I would agree with that. Now, some of the folks that are in the transhumanist movement realize that eugenics has a little voltage associated with it, and they want to distance themselves from it.
Yeah, they want to rebrand themselves.
Right. But a guy named Steve Fuller, who I think very highly of, basically is working to kind of reform the idea of eugenics because he sees it in those terms. He says, yes, this is the improvement of human beings is work that we should be doing, but there's a cost to it, and society needs to figure out how to bear that cost. So it's a question of whether or not this is a good thing to do is hotly debated. But I think the honest transhumanists agree that there's a lot of similarity. And Steve Fuller being one of them. I think it's interesting, a number of talks today have kind of brought up different pieces of this. The talk on death earlier was part of that. And this idea of John Duncan Scotus and his equivocal predication, all this sort of stuff. There are a lot of people who are thinking about this from different points of view, but they all come back to Christian thought and theological thought. That's one of the things that caught my eyes early on in the process, is that this transhumanism is supposedly coming out of secular science and technology, and yet that is where these theological issues are coming up, of what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be in the likeness of God? What is God? Rather than from the true Christians. And Christians are kind of riding this wave of trying to figure out where they belong.
Let's take a question, James.
Your last slide, the last sentence, said Christian theology offers tools to resolve the threat of artificial intelligence. So were you referring to, for example, the case that Nick Bostrom has been talking about, or what's the threat that's resolved and what are the tools that are addressing?
Well, Bostrom's book on superintelligence basically presents kind of a picture of an inevitable descent into evil. And I think that the story of Genesis 3 brings thought to that picture. That there is a tendency toward bad choices if you're left to do free things. And what do you do from there? If God were to wipe away the human race because they fell into sin, is that God would follow? That seems to be one of the solutions that Bostrom makes. But what are our responsibilities when we generate artificial beings? If in fact we are in the process of creating new forms of life, then don't we have some responsibilities? What is our responsibility if we're in the place of God in that situation? So theological thought on the fall and sin and God and love kind of shed light on some of the very thin issues that artificial intelligence folks are wrestling with today. What is their responsibility in this situation? What are the potential risks? What are the benefits? And how do we, as the creators of these things, manage those things? Think about them. The denial of sin is a popular thing all the way across, but who knows more about sin and its consequences than Christians, I think. So I think that's what I mean by that last sentence.